Welcome back to the Life on Target podcast. I'm your host, Nathan Spearing, bringing you my interview with Reverend William Bivens. This was an amazing discussion that I had with the original pastor of our church, who 30 plus years later is still a member of our church. And one of the things I'd like to mention about this is it's really amazing the amount of wisdom that is available in your local church body. If you are someone in good standing, someone that's been committed to a faithful church, and for a guy that's in his 70s and that has lived a lot of life, it's pretty easy to say, hey, can we get together and let me ask you a few questions? So I wanted to meet with Pastor Bill and ask him these questions, and I just took out microphones and coincidentally also had my 14-year-old son edit the audio for you. He's sitting next to me right across from the office. So before y'all have even listened to this podcast, it has benefited me and it has benefited my son. And it is a older man that has been down the path before all of us and raised children and pastored a church. And that wisdom is likely available to you where you are in life right now, geographically. There is likely an older man that has done some things in life that you want to know about, that you want to learn from. And they're at a point in life later on with their empty nesters, if you will, grandparents, great-grandparents. They have the time to meet with you. But societally, we've kind of discarded them. We've kind of think, oh, that's that old guy that's a little bit slower to move and doesn't understand TikTok or whatever, all the fads and things that are going on. And we can think that the wisdom is dated. And the fact is, wisdom is never dated. Wisdom is something that we read about in Proverbs was with God at the formation of this universe or this galaxy or whatever. And is available to us if we would just ask. So in addition to listening to this episode and gleaning a lot of very interesting things from a man that has lived a long and successful life, I'd like to also challenge you to go out and find someone locally that can teach you and be a mentor to you. So without further ado, my interview with Pastor Bivens.
Okay.
Yep.
And hey, looks like you got it well equipped here.
Yep.
I have no idea what a roadcaster is. Believe it or not, I majored in broadcasting.
Really?
And worked at a TV station a long time ago.
Whenever you do scripture readings at church, I was like, I think Pastor Bivens needs an audio Bible, like, to just read it.
You think so?
Because you have a voice for it.
Believe it or not, growing up, I was such an introvert. I couldn't get up for a class and say my name, let alone read. And, you know, I think it was until I had children that I started reading out loud. And I guess it's developed over the years.
And you've read, what was it that you were reading to the covenant prep children every?
Chronicles of Narnia, one of my favorites.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, well, I did it with my kids growing up. Each one would go through it again. I have six kids, so you go through it a lot. And
yeah.
And after a while, I started to develop my English accent because my wife's English. And then I started doing the various voices for Mr. Beaver and Mrs. Beaver. And
did you do that for the kids,
yeah,
too?
Yeah, I did. That's fun. I realized that whether they got anything out of it or not, I enjoyed it.
Yeah.
It's fun.
Well, you pretended at the beginning when I asked you to come on here that you didn't know what a podcast was, but then we found out.
Yeah, I guess I listen to one almost every day. Yeah.
Yeah.
Old R.C. Sproul.
Yeah.
Yeah, I you know, it's you don't appreciate some people until they're gone.
Mm-hmm.
I knew him way back when.
Yeah.
1975, he was one of my professors.
Really?
Yeah, I took apologetics under him. He came in to do one of those, you know, all-day short courses for a month.
Okay.
And that's why I first met him, and seemed like I ran to him throughout my life until I went to Ligonier when it was still in Ligonier, Pennsylvania. That's how far back I go, yeah.
And how old were you when you met him or when you took that class?
I guess I was 25. It was after my Army days.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So what was the... talk a little bit about the Army days. What was the we'll get to current eventually, but
The Lord used, you know, it's like my little ride down Midland Road a week and a half ago in the ambulance. You know, you think it's the worst possible thing, but it was great. It was great. Yeah. Same thing with my Army days. I was in those rebellious 60s. Mm-hmm. I was not going to have anybody tell me what to do. My dad was a hero, and I didn't know it. Hmm. He was a brilliant man, loving man, but I didn't know it. And I rebelled against everything, good or bad. He was one of those World War II heroes. He was at D-Day all the way through the Battle of the Bulge and won 4 Bronze Stars, but he never talked about it, and so I didn't know until the day before his funeral. But I was rebellious. I went away to University of Florida to do anything but study, and by the fall, it was getting pretty clear. My college days were coming to an end, and I got a letter from him saying, we'd like to know how you're doing, you know, and we're sending you a check every month to pay for things. We'd like to, you know, have a letter to kind of tell us thing, and I wrote back to him. I probably did the meanest thing I ever did to anybody. I wrote back and said, I'm not going to write you. This will be the last letter you ever receive, and this will be the last time you ever hear from me. I don't want you in my life. I don't need you. Basically declaring independence, just a little over 19 years old. So,
and you had already decided you didn't want to continue college.
Well, no, but that was kind of inevitable because so I went to work in Gainesville, Florida, in an ice house for $1.60 an hour, you know, where it's 0 degrees and these 300-pound blocks come down the chute and you grab it with these tongs and you chop it up with the ice pick and try to feed it into this grinder without getting your hand for $1. So I went from free education to $1.60 an hour in an ice house, and that was really brilliant. Well, I had independence. And so, you know, it wasn't too long. You know, that's not going to last long. And so I dropped out of college. In those days, you dropped out of college, you became 1A, which means you're eligible for the draft. So I was drafted in 1970 during the Vietnam War days. And as I walked into that induction station down in Coral Gables, Florida, there was this old man there. And I didn't know what he was doing there. He had a big old box, and he was handing out little books. And I didn't know what it was, but he was giving it to everybody, and some threw in the trash, some put it, you know, didn't take one. But I took one and put it in my pocket, and it turned out to be a Bible, a Gideon Bible. And that night, as I arrived at Fort Campbell in my barracks, I knew I needed help. I began reading that Bible, and I read it every night in basic training. Everybody else was sleeping, and that changed my life. It really did. I went to visit a chaplain, and I knew that despite all the rebellion and mess-ups and disappointments in my life and wasted 19 years, 20 years, that there was a God who really loved me, despite myself. And fast forward not too long after that, I did AIT, getting ready to go to Vietnam, and came home on leave and met my wife, which is another one of those great things in life. I'm visiting the mother of an old girlfriend. and she was still a friend, and Peter was working. She was over here from England, about ready to go home, had enough of the United States, been over here a couple of years, and we met, and we were together every day and night that short week and a half, and came visited me up Fort Knox we said we need to get married before I go to Vietnam. I'm not sure, you know, the wisdom of that. You know, you think not very far in the future when you're 20 years old. And
so she was 20 as well.
No, she's a couple years younger, older than me.
Okay.
And so she I have more of an excuse. You know, why would you marry somebody like me? In fact, right before the wedding, we came down for just a couple of short days, a buddy of mine, to get married. And just before we got down, my dad had her over at the house and dinner, and she couldn't figure out why. And then afterwards, she found out why. He was going to kind of convince her that she shouldn't do this. That his son would never amount to anything, and that would be the most unwise thing that she could ever do. And so all that does make her mad, more convinced, you know, when somebody tells you you shouldn't do something. And the Lord was so faithful.
Was she a Christian at the time as well?
No, the pastor that was going to the wedding, I didn't know anything. I was so naive about everything. I had a pastor friend that was my pastor and helped me, guided me to help me understand something about Jesus and what the cross meant and putting your faith in him and praying with me and Bible reading, but I didn't know much. And she knew even little. She started coming to the church after we met, but it was his assistant, because he became very sick, and it was his assistant that met with us like the night before we were married at Key Biscayne Presbyterian Church, a guy named Jim Stout. And Jim said, I don't know if I can do this. This is just not a good plan. You haven't known each other very long. You come from different cultures, you know. You haven't known each, you know, just and I'm not even sure where you are spiritually. But sometime around midnight, the three of us got down on our knees and not only committed our life to Christ, but our marriage to Christ, our future. And I don't know if I would have done it, but he did it. He formed our marriage, and he's since come back into my life. We text and email and sometimes talk on the phone quite a bit. He's in bad shape. He's not that much older than me, but he's in bad shape out in California. But dear friend and brother.
So he counseled you until midnight.
Yeah.
And that's, basically that's we got to get to a certain point.
Yeah. And you know, and off we went. And the Lord provided everywhere we went mentors, because we didn't know what it meant to be a Christian, let alone have a Christian marriage and a Christian family. And because that wasn't the way I grew up, we never talked about the Bible, never read the Bible. Parents got mad at some pastor and quit going to church when we were young. And she went to a Church of England where it was just formality and go twice a year. And she quit a long time ago. And so it was all new. And Lord, everywhere we went, when we finally, like a couple of days before I was supposed to ship off to Vietnam, a friend of mine at Fort Knox said, I'd like to go to Germany instead. And so went to Germany, and she went back to England. And lo and behold, I got chosen out of thousands to come into the headquarters of 7th Army and work for the special unit. And the next day, a guy walks in and says, I got a Bible study for you, and I want you to come to. And it was the Navigators. Hmm. And we were sent over there for 9 months of discipleship with the Navigators. And then when we finally came back and went back to University of Florida, there was a faithful pastor church there that just took me under his wing and said, we're going to start a Bible study down in Leesburg. Come on with me. And I said, okay. He has talked about the Lord Jesus, and he would teach me songs. And I remember coming, they had a Sunday evening service where I was singing and Bible study. And the first time I went, I said, this is fantastic. I went up to him and said, I know this might be irregular, but would it be possible that I could borrow one of these books, like hymn books? And because I never, these are fantastic. And so I went home and started memorizing hymns. And I thought, that's what you're supposed to do. And more and more. I have a young lady who is a senior at Clemson right now. She used to date my grandson, who has graduated from Clemson. And they don't date right now, but she still calls us grandpa and granny. And she wrote me back in the fall. We've been writing back and forth every week or two. And asked me what my favorite hymn was. And I said, you know, I can right now think of 10. You know, I guess it's whichever one I'm singing right now, but I put at the top of this, you know, Be Thou My Vision and Great Is Thy Faithfulness. But I think it's the third verse that kind of summarizes it all. See, pardon for sin and a peace that endureth, thine own dear presence to cheer and to guide, strength for today, and bright hope for tomorrow. Blessings all mine, with 10,000 beside. I've got to hold that, you know. I may not have strength for tomorrow, but the Lord's giving me strength for today. Mm-hmm. You know, and how he could pardon me, but pardon all my sins in his presence. You know, I can lean on him whether I'm going down the road, Midland Road, in the ambulance, or whether I'm out in the woods chopping up firewood and enjoying the peace out there. I'm blessed.
You have quite a garden. And I'm gonna, we have to get permission for you to me to share that video of your garden tour, where you're doing the voices and the gardener. And
yeah, that was a for some reason one Lord's Day I had a little extra time and I was not planned.
We really enjoyed that tour. Yeah. And you do CrossFit.
I do. That's a blessing in my life. I've always ever since Army days, we had a new first sergeant in Heidelberg, and we were getting lazy, and he says every day at 4 o'clock we're going to go out and do PT, and we thought he was crazy and we hated it because it was February and it was about 10 degrees and ground was frozen, but we're going to run, and pretty soon we liked it. And after a while, we felt really great. So when I got out, I kept running, and I started getting into doing races. And I was doing two a day. I'd get up at 4 o'clock and four classes and run, and come back and run in the evening after doing my studying. And I've been doing that all my life, adult life. And then I got involved into triathlon out of an Army doctor friend, Mark Crago, who got me into triathlons. He was going to do one while he was over in Afghanistan. We're going to do it together. And then right before I was going to have my last triathlon, suddenly I was in the hospitals. A hospital seemed to be like turning points in my life, but good points. I almost died up in Frederick, Maryland. They rushed me to John Hopkins, and I spent 12 days there with no food and water, just IVs in both arms. I thought I was going to die. I had acute pancreatitis and almost did die. And eventually they took out my gallbladder. So I quit triathlons and I'm going to get back in shape again and start doing marathons. So I trained for marathons and that's when they diagnosed me with melanoma and I had to go to this oncologist surgeon up in Chapel Hill. And he said, we got to operate right. I mean, like sooner than later. And I said, well, in the month this was February of 2012. I got a marathon doing in Myrtle Beach. What you do that the next day, we'll do it. So I was running the marathon. It was great. I felt so free, Lord's presence, and the whole way I was telling people, today's my birthday, which February 17th is, and the next day is my anniversary, and the next day I'm going to have cancer surgery, and I don't know how it's going to go. I can't lose. For me to live is Christ, to die is gain. And I was sharing with everybody. I was, it made the marathon go real well, mm-hmm. and it was a great time. So after that, I couldn't drive anymore, so I had to get my daughter, who was into CrossFit, so we were teaching at the same school. So she brought me to CrossFit. And so I said, I think I'll do this after I get healed up. So I've been doing that for 12 years, 10 years, 10 years, almost 11 years. And in fact, that is the very place where I had my heart attack. Another turning point in my life, which is going to be 7 years next Monday, 16th of January. That's when I was blessed with my one and only heart attack that you only need one, right? Mm-hmm. I didn't know any heart problems until that day. And we were Saturday morning partner wad, and I was paired up with this another wonderful friend of mine, medical doctor, Robert. And I just started the workout, and I don't remember any of this. I collapsed, my heart stopped, breathing stopped, turned blue, and bunch of SF medics were there doing CPR on me, and another one was holding my wrist praying for me. And so those three guys, by the way, I text every day, and we're still mm-hmm. in contact, and on the 16th we'll have a conversation. I don't know if you know Ben and mm-hmm. these guys, they're wonderful guys, Eric and Tony, yeah, great guys. Anyhow, so the Lord put me the right place, the right time to have a heart attack, and I spent 5 days of the read. Heart hospital, in a coma. They put me in a coma and lowered my body temperature, and then they medic back me into Chapel Hill. And I woke up on the 6th day. I don't remember any of that. It's just a lot. But you know what I remember? And I was going in and out. I didn't know anything. And I probably bored you because I told you the story before, Nate, but I woke up and then went back out. I kept coming back in and out. But the verse, Philippians 1:21, kept coming up. For me to live is Christ, to die is gain. But is this gain? Am this is my last day. Am I leaving? And then I come back. I'm back, I guess. I'm living, and then I'm back. And finally, I came back for good. And it was a great thing, turning point in my life. But what were we talking about?
I was talking about CrossFit.
Oh, CrossFit.
And you said... CrossFit probably from you coming back, though.
Yeah, you know...
People should not do CrossFit because of heart attacks, right?
Helped. I came back to CrossFit within 6 months. And the owners are all medical people, and so they watch over me. And I think I worry them a little bit, more than a little bit. But I came back and was feeling good until I had to have the triple bypass, and then I was out another 6 months, and I've been doing well there until last Saturday. Mm-hmm. No, last Thursday. Yeah, it's been a week and a half, I guess. Yeah, I was there, and again, it was holiday, so it was a busy time, and my daughter was there, and we were doing partner thing. We didn't do anything. I was coming out. I just changed. It was cold, so I just changed in the bathroom, coming out and walk about a step, and whack, I was hit by my inservable defibrillator. I've had it in there for 7 years, and it had never gone off, and it about knocked me down. And I staggered a few more steps, and it hit me again and knocked me to the couch, and I was in greater pain than I've ever been in, I think. It's the knock that I can remember. And anyhow, 911 was there within a couple of minutes. The fire department, EMS, and that ride going down. I felt such a peace in that ambulance going down to the emergency room. And I really thought, today's the day. Mm-hmm. I'm going to go see Jesus. I really believed it. And the EMS guy that was there doing all these things. Five times he stuck me trying to put a IV in my arm, go bouncing down the middle of the road, you know, mm-hmm. all things. And I thought, you know, that's ridiculous. But yeah, I just really felt like the heart is gone. You know, I've already lived past the expiration. You know, what it says, you know, 70 if you're blessed, and 10 more. You know, I've already gone past the 70, so I'm mm-hmm. good. But it didn't happen. And spent 3 wonderful days, the last days of the year in the hospital. And they let me come home, and don't have much energy. They quadrupled my medicine, which helps my heart irregularities, but it lowers my heart rate down to about 40. So I get out of breath easily.
Mm-hmm.
So, but I'm blessed. I am, you know, wonderful wife who loves me, and children who love me, and wonderful friends around the country.
How many grandkids do you have right now?
Right now, I think the last count was 22.
Wow.
The oldest is 26, and the youngest is not quite a year old. And I got a great-grandchild, too, who's almost a year old.
Wow.
And my oldest granddaughter, she's an RN, and 2 grandchildren are in medical school, and another's going to be a lawyer, and going to a wedding. One of my granddaughters getting married this weekend. And so, you know, just so many exciting things are happening.
Mm-hmm.
A lot.
One of my most memorable moments with you is, I think it was one of the first church leadership meetings that we had during the extravaganza that we've gone through in the last two and a half years. And we were talking about, and you said, I think you said, this is paraphrase, but I think you said, you know, people say that I should probably stay at home during all this, because you met all the quote unquote risk factors to go and hide. You could have made that case and said, oh, you know, this is my health issues, and I should just stay at my house or whatever. But you said, I'd rather die. And I just thought it was just such a blessing to have And you were the first pastor of our church, correct?
Yeah, it's been a lot of years. 1991 that we started at the storefront just down the road from here.
Mm-hmm. So I've heard Dr. Merkel say that you can, you know, there's one way to judge a church is by how many kids you have. Mm-hmm. That's a health factor, which we're doing well there. But then the other way to measure it is how many people were in the church directory, you know, 5 years ago, mm-hmm. 10 years ago, 20 years ago, 30 years ago kind of thing. And we're blessed mm-hmm. in our community or our fellowship to have a lot of people that were there that day at the very beginning, still there. Tons that have been a decade plus, you know, our pastor now 13, 14 years, you know, his first Sunday was my first Sunday.
Wow.
And so it's just, you know, you're pastor emeritus is right. Your official title at the church.
I've been emeritized. I'm not sure what that means, but, you know, after the heart attack, I was pastoring an assistant pastor at a church in Fayetteville, and I just couldn't, you know, the trip, the responsibilities, I realized it was time for me to retire. All my life I said retirement is an unbiblical, not at least non-biblical thing, and mm-hmm. You know, God doesn't want us to do nothing, you know, it's a silly modern concept, this idea of you live your whole life so you can live at ease, and going back to this thing about the 2020 thing and beyond, I am convinced more than ever the most unsafe thing you can do is try to live safely. And I think there's one thing worse than dying, that's quit living.
Wow.
And I am so blessed that we decided to come back to the friends and people here at Sand Hills, and what a blessing it's been. That wasn't our plan, it was the Lord's plan, and how blessed we are to renew old friendships and to have new ones, and we continue to meet with new ones because we continue to add. It's a tremendous thing to meet new people and have them part of the loving fellowship. And it's a family.
It is.
And I don't know how people live the Christian life without a family. I don't know how people live life without a family. I'm blessed with a wonderful family, wonderful church family, wonderful friends.
So talk through your morning routine, because you I get a text from you, you know, every day, and I'm not the only one. Not
almost every day.
Yeah.
Well, now that I'm retired, I tell people I sleep into 4:45, and I used to get up 4:30. Yeah, and people say, you must be a morning person. I said, no, it's just the opposite. I need at least a couple of hours, hour and a half before, begin serious stuff and with people, and I get up quick shower, you know, dogs fed and let them out, then I open my Bible, basically write my journal, page or two every day, basically writing to the Lord, writing about how I was blessed yesterday, you know, Lord, forgive me for blowing up at my wife. Forgive me for neglecting the passage I was going to read or this and that. And thank you so much for bringing that person in for that letter from my granddaughter, mm-hmm. adopted granddaughter, or that wonderful phone call from my old pastor in California who's in his 80s and still thinks a lot of me. And it's a combination of that as well as in the scriptures and letting the scripture speak to me. And so when, you know, it says, Lord is my portion, you know, my lot has fallen on unpleasant places, in thy presence is fullness of joy. Is the Lord speaking to me, you know? Lord, you're my fullness of joy, you're my portion, you're my lot, and speaking to him, he's speaking to me through these scriptures. And I usually go through the Psalms in the morning, and my wife Pita, I take her a cup of tea, and we have our prayer time together after my prayer time, and she has her devotions coming out for breakfast, and we eat together. Then we have a reading, the devotion book we read, sometimes we use table talk, but then we usually read the proverb for the day. It's 31 Proverbs. We usually read that. So today we read the 10th chapter of Proverbs. And then throughout the day, it says, blessed is a man who doesn't walk in the counsel of the ungodly, or stand in the way of sinners, or sit in the seat of mockers, but his delight is in the Lord, and on his law he meditates day and night. And in that meditation, even though I want to have a balanced diet, I read the Psalms every day to warm my heart and direct my heart heavenward. I want to read the Proverbs today to grow in wisdom. But I also want to read the Old Testament books and New Testament gospel and epistles. So I want a balanced diet, which is kind of, if you ever use the plan, Robert Shea.
Yeah, I think so.
Anyhow, he kind of has that plan, but I haven't really used that exactly. But that's kind of the balanced diet that I do and try to read before bed. And I think what you do before bed is, it's like, the most critical times when you fly is takeoff and landing. I think that's kind of, taking off your day and landing, ending well. I think it affects how you sleep. I think the dreams, I think it just affects the rest of the day too, and making sure that you're prayed up, you're confessed up. And, as we were told in our marathon counseling before and after we were married, don't go to bed unreconciled, and Paul said to the Ephesians, don't let the sun go down on your anger and give the devil a foothold. And amazing how we forget those simple things. So what else you want to know?
Well, whenever I pulled you aside, I think it was Sunday morning or Sunday night, you said, why, what do you want to do? And I said, I think that we talked about mentorship.
Yeah.
And you talked about already how the Lord's provided you with mentors and how you feel like that's kind of missing.
Yeah.
And so talk through the whole wisdom of 20 years past thing that we talked about.
And I think wisdom is gained by being stupid and doing stupid things. And I've done a bunch of those. All of things, the wise person who always had it together, always made the right decisions, who always, seemed to just not fall into the pit holes, the traps of the devil and things like that. But we ought to learn from the mistakes of others, and that's one way we grow from wisdom. We don't have to make all the mistakes. I remember one time I was visiting my oldest daughter, who was in South Carolina, and we just came back from worship service. I guess we came back early. The rest of the family was visiting or something with somebody. It was just her and me. And she asked something about what the church did. I don't know if in the worship service or... And I was trying to be nice, but I said, basically, I don't think I would do that. And she said, but you used to do that. And I said to Sarah, there were so many things that I did I wish I hadn't done, But, we were talking about this on Sunday. I got this theory, and I can't put my finger on a verse or scripture or read it from some wise people, and I've had some wise people, but the Lord's put in my heart, or I just made it up. But I have this theory that the Lord gives us wisdom about 20 years late. So when we're little boys, we need young fathers in our life to be involved with us, to take us out, to get beyond our, how shall I put it, beyond our mother's apron strings, so that they're not over us watching and screaming, be careful, don't get too close to the edge and things like that. So we learn how to be a man by not being purposely dangerous and stupid, but at the same time learning how to get out of our comfort zone and walk or hike or run farther than you thought you were able to climb higher than you thought you were able to, go up those trees. And also to learn, that your life is a gift. And at an early age, learn to know the Lord and to know Him well in the Scriptures and follow in those paths and all the way up. So when you're a teenager, that you have somebody that is 20 years in advance. And I got to tell you, everybody says, listen to me. But when you're going through those teenage years, you don't want to listen to anybody. And we got to teach them all your life, you need to walk with the wise. Mm. You need, there's safety in the counsel of many. And we got to teach them to take that, because I didn't. And when I was 20, I thought I knew everything. You know, when I was a little kid, I thought there are no dangers out there. I can jump on a bus from Key Biscayne and go downtown Miami and spend the day and even hitchhike there when I was in junior high school and go there in the middle of the night when my parents thought I was camping out in the woods of Key Biscayne, you know, and just crazy things. We need to take advice. And, you know, when you're having your own kids, how stupid it is to think you know anything about child rearing. Mm-hmm. Oh, I've read the books. You know, no, we need grandparents. We need older people that tell us, you know, how to handle those things, how to handle the crisis. And we've already been prepared in some cases, but you don't know what day will bring. None of us do. As I tell you about my life, you know, so the major things, they were the good things, because the Lord got my attention and I began to listen maybe a little more. You know, I don't know if I told you, one of my best friends in seminary, and I had a wonderful seminary experience. I had an RC, but I happened to start seminary in the summer. I went up there the summer of 74. And if you know anything about U.S. history, summer of 74, it was when Watergate came to a head and President Nixon resigned. And suddenly Gerald Ford became president, which also meant suddenly one of my friends and classmates was the president's son. Mm. And so all 3 years of seminary, we had Secret Service agents going with us to class and all that stuff. But I was blessed through that time. But with wonderful counsel, is another dear friend who was 3 years older than me, but he might as well been 20 years older than me. And we have renewed friendship. In fact, he called just this past Sunday. And we talked, and dear friend, a brilliant guy, but he's the one that kind of pushed me out. I want you to preach for me. First time I've ever been in public. As I said, I was so shy I couldn't speak, you know.
So you're in seminary.
In seminary, yeah.
Not wanting to speak
in
front
of me. Yeah, yeah, yeah. I just went to seminary because I wanted to study the Bible and theology and be around other Christians. I had no idea what training for a pastorate or being a pastor or preacher was all about. And you get out of your comfort zone, and then this guy visited who was with the Great European Mission and said, we need help there. And I said, oh, Lord, you know, I got a English wife and I got a English father-in-law who was going to pay our way to go. And I can't just take a summer off. So I went over there and we worked in some really poor and hard places, you know, places where you didn't have indoor plumbing and places where you couldn't understand a lot of their accents. I thought I understood English accents until you got to places like Romford, England, where they sit at a table and they pass the ba-uh and the wa-uh. But that's my theory is that, you know, and still now that I'm in my 70s, I thank the Lord for friends like Bill Bruff, who's in his late 80s, who you know, I'm talked to not just as a friend and brother, but somebody who's been through things. Mm-hmm. and not just to ask them the questions or hear the advice, but to watch their lives. And so the Lord has enabled me not only to have a few people, but the whole concept of giving advice, they won't want to hear it. And you're probably right. But teaching people to hear biblical counsel from wise people who've been down the road, mm-hmm. even people that have lived some stupid life decisions like me, or made some really good decisions because they had some good counsel and listened to some people, didn't repeat those dumb things. But we need to teach people to take counsel and give counsel. Mm-hmm. Now, on one hand, you know, maybe I should have told them after they went off the cliff. You know, it's kind of a little late, you know. And, you know, I think of broken marriages. And one time Saturday morning, a young man, a soldier, calls me. He was kind of, you know, in church and out of church. But his wife was regular. And he calls me and says, you know, my wife, whatever her name was, says she left me. I said, "Oh, I'm so sorry. You know, we'll pray for why." You know why she left you? No, I don't know why she left. I didn't do anything. And I said, maybe that's why you didn't. And all the things I should have been telling him beforehand that he wasn't doing. Yeah, he didn't do anything. No wonder she left. You know, they crave godly leadership, Christ-like, you know. Love your wife like Christ loved the church. And I don't think any wife would leave any man who was loving like Christ loved the church, who gave himself for the church and laid down his life for his sheep. You know, nobody would be that dumb. So oftentimes we're late. We didn't give the advice when we should have. CrossFit, we do Murph every Memorial Day, honoring Lieutenant Murphy, you know, and Lone Survivor movie and all that stuff in Afghanistan. And I didn't realize that a good friend of mine that we stay in touch with, who called just recently, Alex, who's now retired down in Tampa, he and his wife Kelly are dear friends, and we get together, spent a wonderful weekend with him not too long ago, and they talk. They called when I was in the hospital recently. But Alex, I didn't know this, but the night before Murph went on his little mission, Alex met with him. He was the SF team that had been over there for 9 months. He said, you're going to get revealed. It's not going to go. I've been here. I know that territory. I know those people. Mm-hmm. They wouldn't listen to him. Mm-hmm. And they all got killed because he wouldn't listen to them. And he's the one that led the SF team to rescue Marcus. And Marcus, he was the only one. Mm-hmm. So, you know, there's some big consequences and there's some little stumbling. But one of the people why was I talking about seminary again? One of my dear friends, best friends at seminary was Ron, but there's another guy named Walt. And Walt was single and a little older than the others. And he got to know Elizabeth Elliott real well. We all did, because she lived right there in South Hamilton. But he got to know her daughter real well and married Valerie Shepherd. And they had a wonderful life. But I remember getting to know Elizabeth a little bit because of that connection. But I remember Elizabeth saying, she was asked by the Women's Seminary Association to speak to chapel about the trial of widowhood. You know, we all know about her husband, Jim Elliott, dying in the jungles of Ecuador, you know, taking a spear and trying by the people he was trying to bring the gospel to. But And then she came back, did a lot of writing eventually, after taking the gospel to those people, the Aucas, who had killed her husband. But eventually came back and wrote a lot of books and became well-known in the Christian church, and moved to South Hamilton and met a professor there, a guy named Leach, Dr. Leach, a beloved, godly professor, and they married. Mm-hmm. And 2 years later, he got cancer and died. So they wanted her to come and talk about the trial of widowhood. And she looked at them and said, this representative group said, no, you could help somebody. No, I will not talk about the gift of widowhood. I'll talk about the gift of widowhood. It was God's gift. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I tell people the gift of cancer, the gift of heart attack, the gift of knowing, you know, Paul says, what, 2 Corinthians 12, he says, yeah, you know, when I'm weak, I am strong, you know, thy grace is sufficient for you. Mm-hmm. And I go back to church, pastor says, well, y'all better now? I don't know, you know. I look at it this way, Nate, I said, you know, three things could happen. Either I get worse and die and go be the Lord, or I stay the same and have to trust the Lord. That's not bad, is it? Or I get better, you know. Either I don't get better, I stay the same, or get better. It's okay. It's the Lord. I'm the Lord's, right? Mm-hmm. For me to live is Christ. I'm the Lord's. Mm-hmm. Purchased with the price of his precious blood. Mm. Yeah, and I'm blessed.
So how old are you now?
I'm 72, I'll be 73 next month.
Okay. So can you do like a rapid
what you'd tell a 12-year-old, a 22-year-old, a 32-year-old, a 42-year-old, like, let's go quick decades, because you would still have their wisdom to talk to a 12-year-old,
I wish I was. I hope so. I love talking to your sons, especially Abel, your youngest. I don't know.
He likes to talk
Ever since he smashed his finger at my house, we've been friends. I hope so, and I think that's important. And sometimes children, little children, they talk. That's why I love speaking at the chapel, which I guess I'll do tomorrow at the school and the little kids, because I say sometimes they'll listen to grandparent types more than their own parents. And so that's an open door. But I what I tell them is, you know, listen to parents, watch your parents. They're not perfect, but they're the Lord's. And what they are is the walking objects, demonstrations of God's grace. Listen, you know, Paul and all his godliness and achievements and success says, you know, the saying is sure and worthy of full acceptance that Christ Jesus came in the world to save sinners, which I'm the worst, to demonstrate his grace, you know. And listen, you only kind of parents you have are sinners, and you love them because they're gifts from God, and thank God you have ones that love Jesus. They're not perfect. They're going to sin, and love covers a multitude of sin. But you listen to them because they are the ones that God has given to you to instruct you and nurture you in the nurture and admonition of the Lord. And it's not going to be perfect. We got this idea this day and age, especially as we look at history or evaluate anybody today, and it goes from the pastor to the person who helped start our country, George Washington. We find something wrong and we dismiss him. And I want to say, is that all you know about me? Listen, I could tell you a whole lot worse. Listen, if you want a perfect pastor, if you want a perfect parent, if you want a perfect, you know, father of our country, I'm sorry, it isn't going to happen. The only one we have is Jesus, and Paul says, "Follow me as I'm following Jesus." And that's why don't do something stupid like me and dismiss your parents and let them know you love them. And at the same time, understand, learn from their mistakes. They're not perfect. And as you're growing up, you know, you don't want to be the opposite, because the opposite of bad is bad. You know, it's the opposite of stupid is probably stupid. It's something you're in the middle there, and you're going to need a lot, especially when you get to that adult age. It's funny, when I was 19 and said, I'm not doing with parents and my life is over, you know, and other people have, God has a plan for my life. I remember sitting in on my pastor's bed down at Key Biscayne, you know, so everybody else, God seems to have a plan for, but there's nothing, you know, for me. And then later on, reading the biography, a biography of Billy Graham, when he was 19, he said, my life is over. I've all the purpose. God can't do anything with me. I guess there's no reason for me to live, you know. And look what he did to Billy Graham. So we don't know. But you know what? You know, listen to your parents. And also, parents, bring in other people. I guess if one of the best things, as I talked to my kids, one of the best things I did is we brought in some great people. Great missionaries, pastors, but just ordinary people, people that love Jesus. Some they still now are friends of, even though they're older. I remember the right before we moved to North Carolina, which was 34 years ago, we're living in Taylor, South Carolina, and had our house on the market, ready to move here, and went to a conference in Greenville. And they had some really good speakers there. One was Jay Adams, another one of my former friends and pastors from theological days, seminary days. So I went up to see him afterwards and said, "This is great, you know. Good to see you again. I know you're speaking again tonight, and you hate going out. Why don't you come to our house for dinner?" So I brought Jay, Dr. Adams. This guy's written thousands of books, and known, world renowned for his counseling and all that. And he came to our house for dinner, and I didn't even tell my wife. And we have, you know, six little children running around. The youngest is in diapers, little baby, and the next one, Joshua, who is about 4 or 5, full of energy. And he went to sit next to Dr. Adams, and Dr. Adams said, "You just call me Mr. J." And he sat next to him, and they just hit it off. And I'm looking at my watch, and I said, "Yeah, we got to get back. I need to get you back for your thing." And not only that, I was told I'm supposed to pick up this young author, speaker, preacher, guy by the name of Sinclair Ferguson. He's waiting on the side. He's probably on the sidewalk right now. We better get going. No. Well, we're going upstairs. Joshua wants to show me his toy box. We're going up there. And Sinclair first can wait on the sidewalk. Forget him. And then we go up. And so those are the kind of people, you know, we had in our house and kids experienced with all growing up. That I think that was one of the smartest things we did. I should probably do that more.
Well, I was talking with Joey today on the job site that that's what I feel like is the benefit of the church is our sons and our daughters, our wives, whatever. Yeah. Everyone's looking around and looking at everybody living life, and nobody's perfect. When you fellowship with each other long enough, you get to see you get to see the worst things sometimes. But real people seeking after Jesus,
sinners saved by grace, forgiven,
and to be able to say, if you don't want to listen to me, Eli, you know, you're 14 now, you're starting to think you know most everything and he say, go talk to a dozen men you know, maybe 30 or 40 men.
Yeah.
Go out to lunch with them.
Yeah.
And talk to them about it. It doesn't have to. Don't take my word for it.
Yeah.
Pick the men. You know, pick the lineup.
Yeah. And that's good. And sometimes we do got to be careful. We who are, don't want to usurp the place of the parents, the father, you know. And that's one of maybe the wisest thing that somebody can do is listen to your father, but you know, infirm what's being said, and maybe some, you know, it's a search of scriptures. Ultimately, the scriptures are our authority, not my ideas or yours, and direct them that way, and ultimately direct them. It doesn't matter whether this makes your dad happy or you happy or neither of you happy. This question is, does this please Christ? Is that the ultimate defining factor? And that's important. But we were like that. Your son's come to me. 14, 15. I couldn't wait to get out. I want to be independent. I thought I was smart enough, physical, strong enough, and mature enough, you know, declare independence and all that stupidity, and realizing that I've never walked that road before. I remember I was with my oldest son in Rocky Mountain National Park. Been a few years, that's a bit stronger and able. You know, they have like a dozen 14-foot peaks, high places. It's a great place. It's a beautiful place. Yeah, we were just going to, you know, walk along, just look at the view. And we're walking, you know, 4 or 5 miles past the ranger station, seeing this magnificent view. And we come to a turning point. And one side goes down to the parking lot, a mile or so, goes down, easy walk. And the other one goes off to a place called Mount Ula. Mount Ula. And so one of those 14,000 plus peaks, and it says, if you take this fork, you are headed toward Mount Ulf. The trail is difficult to follow and is very steep. It crosses the transcontinental divide, and many lose the trail and get lost. Don't you be one of them. And I looked at it as a challenge, you know. I know where we're going, and we did it. And by the grace of God, we had never done that before. You know, I traveled little ones like the Appalachian Trail and things like that. But, yeah, it was tough, and I thought I was in good shape. And we made it back. And just as we're coming back to that little fork in the road, we see these, I say old ladies now, they're probably my age now, coming, you know, and being led by this looked like a retired forest ranger type lady with the Smokey the Bear hat and the long socks and shorts on and the walking sticks, and she's leading them with great authority, and one's behind her just timidly kind of whatever she says walking along, and she starts up that Mount Ula trail, and I didn't want to say anything, but I got to, because the weather was changing. This is July. It dropped about 30 degrees, probably snow, wind, and cold, and steep, and rocks. And I said to her, ma'am, do you know where you're going? Oh, yeah, we're going down to the parking lot. And, no, you took the wrong way. This goes to Mount Ula, and there's nothing between here for another 20 miles other than hard trail and difficult path. And I think this is not going to go well for you all, trying to be nice. And no, I know my way around. I know where I'm going. And she wouldn't listen to us, and off she went. And we said, oh, she won't. We did our start. Finally, we better talk to these other ladies. And finally, we start talking to two or three of them. And they said, wait a minute. And they called her Clara. We need to talk. And we took about finally convinced. But you know, that's the way life is.
Mm-hmm.
Life is hard. You know, it's steep, and sometimes it's easy to lose the trail, and sometimes, you know, we don't know where we're going.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't it just make sense? Not only is it biblical, doesn't it make sense that we talk to somebody who's been down that trail before?
Mm-hmm.
I look back and I say, how foolish so often I was, and still am. Yeah, pick up the phone, go visit, make those, you know, stops and say, pray a lot. But Lord uses means to answer those prayers and brings people into your life and say, you know, I wouldn't say that or do that to my wife. You know, that wouldn't be real wise, and some biblical reasons why. And you know, I'm thankful I didn't go down that trail, or I did, and only by the grace of God I came back alive.
Yeah, and Kevin and I were talking a couple weekends ago just about that's a resource.
Yeah.
Like, specifically as men, why can't we say, I don't know what the heck I'm doing?
Oh.
Help me, you know? And there's a whole session.
Yeah.
There's multiple pastors, and you just come in and say, I don't know.
Yeah.
This doesn't seem to be going well. Can you help me? And he expressed that so often in the ministry, people come too late.
Yeah. Yeah.
They come a year late.
Yeah.
They should have come a year ago.
Yeah.
They should have. When you start to feel like it's not going well.
Before you're at the edge of the cliff.
Yeah. And you can tell. And that's why I feel like is the benefit of being close as a church. It's like, you know, a lot of times I feel like people, as soon as they get to the point where you start to see who they really are, they get pretty uncomfortable, and then they leave. But that's exactly where you want to be.
Yeah, exactly.
Where they see you and they know you and they can say, I can read through this. This is what's going on, and it's too late, you know?
I remember a long time reading Franklin Graham's book, the son of Billy Graham, who runs Samaritan's Purse. He wrote a book on his rebellious life, A Rebel with a Cause, I think it was called.
Mm-hmm.
And he talks about he was with a godly man, a man who ran World Vision, a guy by the name of Bob White or something. He flew a plane, you know, and he had taken them some pretty rough areas. And he said to young Franklin, said, this is a God moment, because we're only going to make it out of here if God wills. You know? Mm-hmm. This is a God moment. You know, and sometimes we're in God moments where only, you know, unless the grace of God, you know, we're not going to make it. And it's not that we foolishly put ourselves in deep water and can't swim and things like that. But sometimes God's gracious providence is moving us there, where we sometimes have to simply say, I don't know. I'm not able. And that's humbling. We don't use that word, and we surely don't teach it and practice it very well, even among Christians, even in the church.
Mm-hmm.
I remember just after I had my heart attack, and I had some people, nice people, visit me, and some old friendships renewed, like my friend Walt Shepherd, who married Valerie, and he came visit with me, and he was playing a church down at Southport, and it wasn't going well, And Walt said to me, Bill, I need help. Okay. He came visit me. And then he said, I need some counsel on church planning. And, you know, and there I lay in bed. And I said, you know, Walt, you should have come to me 30 years ago when I knew everything. You know, I think our greatest problem is ourselves. We deceive ourselves better than we deceive anybody else. Mm. And we don't even know that we don't know. And that's a problem. That's a problem. We don't even know we don't know. And we need to be taught that you know, maybe I'm wrong. Mm-hmm. You know, you mentioned about don't knowing and admitting that. That's humbling. Mm-hmm. You come to tell people, I can answer any question in the Bible. I've and a lot of it's with the answer, I don't know. I don't know. Mm-hmm. You know, if I knew the mind of God, it'd have to be God, right? And we get this idea, someday I'm going to know it all. I think the more we know, the more we learn we don't know. Mm-hmm. And so we need to teach and model humility, not just as a, you know, that's a nice little spiritual fruit to put on our badges. No, it's a practice every day. We don't know what a day will bring. Mm-hmm. You know, we think we can, and the proverb says, "You fool, you don't even know what a day will bring."
Mm-hmm. That's a pretty good way to end it. Yeah. You fool,
you fool. Yeah, I talked about, you know, favorite hymns and favorite verses. Nobody has Proverbs 31:1 as their favorite verse. You know, it starts off with, "You stupid person." You know, there's nobody stupider that ever lived. You know, and you know, that's, yeah, what is it? But Proverbs says how many dozens of times, you know, the stupid man is the one who doesn't take rebuke, the one who doesn't take counsel, that doesn't listen. Mm-hmm. Bunch of stupid men who need to repent, need to ask God's forgiveness and be renewed in our dependence upon Him and to rely upon the means, gracious means, that He supplies.
Mm. Amen.
Amen.
Thanks again for listening to the episode with Pastor Bivens. If you got any value out of this, share it with a friend. And as I said at the beginning of this interview, look around in your immediate physical, geographic church circles for an older man that may have some wisdom that will help you avoid some consequences for your lack of wisdom or your ignorance right now. Where investing that time with somebody who has traveled the path before you will make the path easier for you, will build you up, will allow them to continue to provide value to you and enable you to do things better in your life for the glory of God, for the betterment of yourself, your family, and your local community. Also wanted to mention real quick, I will be in Battleground, Washington in May, the 5th and 6th of May. The Traditional Fatherhood Intensive will be held on April 5th and 6th out there at C.R. Wiley's Church. I'll be there. Rory Groves will be there. So any of y'all in the Midwest or any of y'all that are game to travel, that want to hang out with me, Rory Groves, C.R. Wiley at their church, and there's going to be a barbecue afterwards on Saturday night. So we'll be there talking about purpose, provision, and protection. No surprises, I'll be speaking on protection. And so we'll be doing I will be talking on a theology of violence and also how to become more dangerous. So mark your calendars, 5th and 6th of May, and look for the link to go live. We kind of have a splash page up right now, fatherhoodintensive.com, and that will redirect to the Eventbrite page as soon as that is live. We're looking to have that Eventbrite live by Sunday night, and looking forward to seeing some of y'all there. As always, have a good one.